Hello, friends. This is Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW here in Bellevue, Washington, on 1150 AM, just outside Seattle in the United States. The program focuses on out-of-this-world information, including psychic phenomena, UFOs, metaphysics, and predictions for the coming years in Seattle, the United States, and beyond. The purpose of Out of This World Radio is to raise consciousness and to make this planet a far better and much happier place. And I know that with everyone's help, we'll do it. We'll make this planet a better place. We are the fastest-growing metaphysical and spiritual radio program in the world with listeners in over 60 countries. And I know that today's program will be really out of this world. During the first hour, we'll have a wonderful, fascinating interview from 2 to 3 p.m. with Barr McClellan, a former attorney with the Johnson administration who has written a book detailing how U.S. President Lyndon Baines Johnson conspired to murder U.S. President John F. Kennedy. And what you heard is true. He has documented in his book called Blood, Money, and Power, a really fascinating story. I read the book, and we'll be having Barr on in just a few minutes. During the second hour, from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m., we'll be interviewing Dr. Michael Sala of Exopolitics in Hawaii. I consider Dr. Sala one of the world's most knowledgeable and informed UFO researchers, and we'll be talking about the secret American space program and how many corporations both here in the United States and elsewhere, especially Siemens in Germany, are involved with what they call the Interplanetary Corporate Conglomerate. For those of you who haven't heard of that, that's a group of private companies which have approximately 7 million people under their control in slave-like labor camps on Mars, which produce high technological goods for trade with thousands of extraterrestrial groups beyond this planet. We will also be discussing the potentially illegal legislation that U.S. President Obama has just signed on November 25th, just before Thanksgiving, that tries to protect these corporations for their crimes against humanity. This show in particular should be truly a fascinating interview. Before we go on to our wonderful guests, I'd like to thank the many sponsors of this show, including a wonderful Crystal Voyage bookstore in Tacoma and Orion Tech Computers of Bend, Oregon. And before we begin, I'd also like to thank my dear friend Carol's been designing my website and providing great support. My dear friend Ann Nelson, business professor at Walla Walla College, who helped me start my program. My dear friend Michiko Hayashi of the Emoto Peace Project in Tokyo, who's been a great help as well as Hiro Emoto and Dr. Yasuo Nimoto. My friends in the Galactic Alliance who've been supporting my show and my angelic and earthly family, as well as my wonderful sound engineer Eric Ryder, my station manager Eric Crema, without whose help and support this program would not have been possible. We're also looking for sponsors and advertisers for the show. Any advertising on this program will have a worldwide audience in over 60 countries for your goods and services. I've started a new spiritual mentoring program for those interested. I give people two full psychic readings a month for $100. I've been in touch with the other side for 21 years and can help people with relationships, past life, and look into the future, and also contact friends and family. If you're interested, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, and I can also be reached at telephone number 509-750-9793 or toll-free in the United States and Canada at 1-888-879-8339. This is a nonprofit program supported entirely by donations, and if you'd like to donate, please go to our website at www.outofthisworld1150.com and just click on it at the upper right-hand corner. Even a dollar will help, and I want to thank everyone for their donations and support. You can also always listen to the show live from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Online at www.1150kknw.com. And after the show, you can also always listen at www.outofthisworld1150.com and clicking on our guests. But before we go on to Mr. McClellan, I'd like to mention several upcoming events. Tomorrow on Saturday, December 12th, I'll be giving readings from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Lavender Massage in Friday Harbor in beautiful Lopez Island in the San Juan Islands. Part of the monies will be donated to the Emoto Peace Project in Tokyo, which helps the children of Fukushima with cancer. For more information about the wonderful work that Michiko Hayashi and the Emoto Peace Project is all about in Tokyo, please see their website at www.emotopeaceproject.net. Michiko is the global director and director of the Emoto Peace Project here in the United States, and she does wonderful work. With that, I'd like just to spend 1 minute, and I'd like to ask everyone to send lots of love and light to the Emoto Peace Project and to the children of Fukushima with these words. And if you can, please repeat me. Water, we are sorry. Water, please forgive us. Water, we love you. And water, we thank you. And again, if you don't mind just repeating this two more times. Water, we are sorry. Water, please forgive us. Water, we love you. And water, we thank you. And one last time. Water, we are sorry. Water, please forgive us. Water, we love you. And water, we thank you. I want everyone around the world to send lots of love and light to the children of Fukushima and to the Moto Peace Project. They're truly providing a lot of help to them in a very difficult situation. Also, too, the Galactic Alliance, I want to let you know the Galactic Alliance has stepped in and has been cleaning up the radiation around Fukushima. We'll be talking about that 1 week from today, actually, on another program specially devoted to Fukushima. Quickly, I wanted to tell everyone I will be the keynote speaker at a spiritual conference in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, from January 1st to the 4th. At the conference, I'll be giving a presentation on messages from Professor Albert Einstein, U.S. President John F. Kennedy, Senator Robert F. Kennedy, Dr. Masaru Emoto, and Mahatma Gandhi, as well as the Galactic Alliance for Humanity in the New Year. I'll also be giving readings during the event. For more information, please visit their website at www.metaphysicalchapel.com, or you can call me for more information toll-free at 1-888-879-8339, or email me at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. Next month, I will also on January 17th and 18th be giving a presentation for the Moto Peace Project in beautiful Vancouver, Canada at Banyan Books from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sunday. For more information, please contact Banyan Books in Vancouver. It's a wonderful bookstore. Or you can call me or send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. With that, I'd like to introduce my friend, Patrick. Patrick, how are you today?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. Thank you for having me.
Well, I just want to bring you on for a few minutes before we get to Bar. And Patrick, you're my new television producer for my new Out of This World television program starting in February. Thank you.
Yes.
You sounded hesitant. Anyway.
That's a transdimensional yes.
All right. All right. Well, Patrick, could you tell me a little, just quickly about yourself and about this conference you're having that I'll be going to in Florida?
Well, in 87, I did a major spiritual transformation, like a walk-in experience during the harmonic convergence. In 1994, a being, interdimensional being from the realm of essence named Kartron came through, who's been doing sessions with ever since with me. And in 2014, I met this other lady who brings with this very large angelic presence. In 2015, the Metatron field came in. All this time we've been doing, I've been doing all these different spiritual journeys among other, like, keep your day job stuff, but it's grown into this thing called the Kartron Experience, and this is now getting to the place where it's going to start producing events like the one in January. Awakening to Oneness in Fort Lauderdale is designed to set the tone of a very high frequency for 2016 and beyond. And so it is designed to launch, like Kevin Lee, who's the minister down there, who you'll meet at his church, which is lovingly hosting it, has a metaphysical focus. And he is going to be launching a world ministry because it's time to get him into his destiny. You get to also get your show going, because the thing that you're going to have of the former world leaders who are on the other side with the Q&A will be designed to create a greater connection and find out from them what's going on, especially during this election year. That'd be really good to add, what would Kennedy do type of thing for that. And that'll be part of your show, I believe, is what's going to come up, even though we haven't discussed it on this level. And then the Galactic Alliance is what I see would be really good to also give their official positions about what's going on. So that's what's happening in Florida. And then this weekend, I'm going to be at a psychic fair and then do a live broadcast, because the Kartron Experience actually uses live broadcasts on the internet, grassroots level, to give this energy out in a very efficient and beautiful way all over the world.
That's wonderful. And Patrick, how do my many listeners get a hold of you if they'd like a reading or more information about your services?
Yeah, the readings, we do that too. And so just getting things going with the website and everything, but you can look on Kartron 1 with a K, so on Facebook, KARTRON1, the number 1, on Facebook, or you can do Kartron999@gmail.com. So it's going to be very interesting, and tomorrow will be the Portals of Destiny, where Metatron is going to come through me, and we're going to open up the gateway to help the beings of light actually get into their correct timeline, you know, and out of the time is money pseudo timeline that all this other stuff, like false flag and everything, wants to keep us in. It's time we make our own choices.
Okay. Well, Patrick, thank you so much for coming to the studio today. It's so good to see you. And I'm really looking forward to this new television show we'll be doing starting in February.
Oh, yeah. It's time for the new frontiers to become real, because it's time to bring in the way we see things.
You know, President Kennedy's life was cut short, unfortunately, and we'll be going into this with Barr here in a few minutes. But as a psychic, I felt very fortunate to be in contact with him, and he has a lot of messages on what he would do now as president, and we'll be starting that process next month in Florida.
Yes, we'll start maybe even a debate on your show about what the real leaders would do to make things a better place.
I don't want to bring Richard Nixon back for another debate of 1960 on the conference, though. I'm going to leave him out. He had his own time, so.
Yes, it's all good. Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, well, you're welcome, Patrick. And with that, Mr. McClellan's been waiting patiently here to get on. Barr, are you there?
Here I am.
Welcome.
Are you there?
Yes. Welcome to Out of This World.
Thank you.
You have a really interesting background. You studied law at the University of Texas in Austin. You were a strong supporter during that time of course, President John F. Kennedy. And after qualifying as a lawyer, went to work for the administration of President Lyndon Baines Johnson. And in 1966, you joined the law firm of Clark Thomas and Winters, based in Austin, Texas. And after reading your book, you found out lots of interesting things that I think bothered your conscience about the Kennedy assassination. And there's so much here. I want you to have you go into that. But with that, thank you so much for being on today. You've done some incredible work.
Well, yeah, thank you very much for that. It has been incredible, especially looking back on it and what's happened since then. But you invited me for my book, and
yes.
If you have any questions, that might be the best place to start. I guess I can point out one thing in what you've already said, that I was a big supporter of John Kennedy, and after I graduated, or as I was completing law school, I went to D.C. to join his administration. In the course of graduating from law school, 6 months later, he was assassinated, and it is incredible how it fell to me to move right into Lyndon Johnson's administration. Which I was there for 2 years, and then came back to join his lawyer. Ed Clark was, by the way, the secret boss of Texas. He was considered the most powerful man in Texas, and Johnson wrote him saying, "You're the only man I trust." So I had a interesting relationship there, to say the least.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Well, I know that the Kennedy assassination was a shock to the country. I remember it back then. I was just in school, and I remember being called home from being sent home, and I know my parents were very upset with it. And I think that it was such a shocking experience. I don't think the country, even now, Barr, have really gotten over it. There's so much water under the bridge since that time. People still question what happened.
Oh, they do, and it's just really. Well, let's say a supermajority knows there was a conspiracy behind it.
Sure.
What we're really facing, and I've just got to bring out some other stuff that's come out.
Okay.
I got contacted by the Kennedys, and it seems John Kennedy Jr. had written a poem, Penitence Nation, and he was really calling upon the nation to do penitence so that we can get over the trauma that we went through. We've never had closure, really, because people know better. Like I said, 70% of us know better than what we've been told. And I guess it's one thing. It's an affirmation of the integrity of the American people.
Right.
But the big thing that I was able to do was to expose what had happened behind the scenes by bringing in a handwriting expert who could put a man who had killed for Lyndon Johnson in the past, put him on the sixth floor, and if you're familiar at all with the crime scene, that was where Oswald was supposedly located.
Right.
And the book was just, I hate to say it, but it just flowed after that. Once I could corroborate what I had heard inside the law firm, It was downhill.
And out
came the book.
Wow.
If you look at it, and this is the way I did it. Mm-hmm. Lawyer, that's what I do. Mm-hmm. So I looked at it as a lawyer. What can I put together mm-hmm. to corroborate what I had learned inside the law firm, that there was a conspiracy and that there was a big, big bonus paid through Exxon, of all people.
Really?
And then tell the story that a jury could believe. And I said, a handwriting expert, an eyewitness, mm-hmm. A number of associates who were making many admissions against interest, and then particularly LBJ himself making statements that, you know, there was a conspiracy, and information from one of his associates that he said, I've got to kill Kennedy. That followed up an earlier statement he made that I had to kill a federal auditor who was closing in on me. And that put him right at the place you either have to be, don't want to be. You're at the jailhouse or you're at the White House.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, the choice he made was not a difficult one for him. It's just been a fascinating experience of having to present basically a direct case against Lyndon Johnson.
Sure.
Wait and see what his defenses were, and seeing to this day there are none.
Right.
I'm real comfortable now with being able to say that the case is really over.
Mm-hmm.
Johnson was behind the assassination, mm-hmm. and we need to do something about it. I'm kind of jumping around here again, but you opened up with statements about your position with John Kennedy and how something needs to be done, and that is absolutely true. It's been almost unbelievable the way members of the Kennedy family have come to me and have pointed directly at Johnson, and it's been through family members in a continuation that I can start with Jackie, mm-hmm. carry through to John Jr.,
mm-hmm.
and mm-hmm. carry on to a fellow named Jack Worthington, mm-hmm. whose father was John Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
And it just all falls together.
Right.
All the usual suspects are guilty.
Right.
There was a conspiracy.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
And there's time to do something about it.
Well,
and that's what's so heartening, was to hear what you were talking about with your friend Patrick about getting something done.
Well, thank you. And
pardon me for going on, but I'm kind of covering a lot, because you covered a lot already, okay?
You covered
the fact that we need to look at our leaders now.
Oh, absolutely.
And my book has been sold it's been optioned. And one of the things we're working on is, how do we get another John Kennedy? I mean,
yeah.
the line I love is, John Kennedy, we'll always see him. He'll have his hair upswept and looking forward to a future.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, that future never seems to come. And can we get there? And I believe we can. And with your efforts and what we're doing and what a whole lot of people are doing, that, you know, we can make this a far better nation than we are.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Barr. And, you know, I come from a psychic family. I've been in touch with the other side for over 21 years. And I feel extremely fortunate to have been in touch with several great spirits for the past about a year and a half, including President Kennedy. And I promised him that I would do a show right around his assassination, which occurred on November 22nd, to commemorate it, to highlight it every year, because it's not often done in the mainstream press. I think one of the most interesting things to think about is that the same people the same people and their successors who perpetrated this awful crime against the President of the United States are still in power. Many of them are still in power, not all of them, but many of them are still in power, still have an influence. And but I know we can turn this situation around.
One of the things that that President Kennedy has told me recently is that the same if he had been allowed to live back in 1963, he said that we truly would have had a far better planet and a much better place than we have today. For one thing, the Vietnam War would have never happened because he was pulling troops out. There are so many things. The second thing is that the Federal Reserve, if not abolished, it probably would be greatly reduced in influence simply because he had ordered the Treasury through executive action, I think it was Executive Order 11110, to have the Treasury produce the currency for this country under Article 7 of the U.S. Constitution. There would have been a lot of changes. I'd even found out that there was a French journalist that President Kennedy had sent to meet with Fidel Castro the very day he was assassinated on normalizing relations with Cuba. So there's all these things that could have happened but didn't. But he's also telling me now that history goes in cycles, and all the same forces that were present back when he was assassinated back in the early 60s have returned. And we have yet another chance to truly make not only the United States but the planet as a whole much better than it is, and much better and much happier planet. And these forces now, because our destiny is to become a benevolent, loving species on this planet and to live in harmony, that's the future for humanity. And I think that we will succeed this time.
See, this is all what's developing, and it's happening in so many different ways, mm-hmm. but it's all pointing towards the same direction. Mm-hmm. Kind of like everything that rises has to converge. And it seems to be happening even as we watch it. And the beauty of it is we're in a position to make it happen, too. It's not just going to happen. But we can do it moving along with what we have right now. It's going that way. To me, and like you say, John Kennedy was brilliant. Yeah. And he could see things, and he was doing things. The one you mentioned, mm-hmm. he was sending an ambassador to Moscow as he was going to or Dallas with a peace proposal to try and keep the process he had started going.
Oh, how nice.
It's a process that has to go on all the time.
Sure.
We were getting there, and John Kennedy was responsible.
Wow, that's amazing. I want to share something very special with you, Barr, and that's that I've also been in touch with Michel de Nostradamus on the other side. And he is now rewriting the quatrains for the future. And the image that he just came in. The image that I get for him, I've been in touch with him for about a year now, year and a half. He's sitting there in his study back in France, 16th century France, and it's smoky in his den. It's kind of a cold evening there. And he's got this red cape on, and he's sitting with a quill, and he's waiting for us, people on this planet, humanity, to act in a positive way, because the future for us is very bright. But he's also saying we have a responsibility to co-create with the supreme being, God, if you will, who created all of this on this planet, to create a bright, beautiful future for us. So it's not, in other words, even though I know that our future is very bright, we have to step up to the plate, be responsible, spiritual, powerful human beings, and co-create a beautiful future for ourselves. That's why your work is so important. And that's the purpose of my radio station as well, is to raise consciousness and make this planet a better place, because I know that we are great spiritual beings, and we have the power to create good things if we want. We also have the power to create bad things as well, and that's why I don't get into doom and gloom on this program. I know that there are other stations with other guests who are into World War III and forecasting all this doom and gloom. I don't get into it. I don't buy it, because I don't look at our future as dark. I look at it as very, very bright, not only for ourselves, but our children and our children's children.
So we need leadership, and we don't have it right now, I'm afraid.
I agree.
And we need to keep it going. And what is the future going to be for us? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. right now, there are many portents that are not good. Mm-hmm. I was thinking, where have we let it go wrong?
Sure.
And I trace it back to my book, mm-hmm. because I outline in there how Ed Clark ran a banana republic. Mm-hmm. And you may have remembered that the Warren Commission, when it met, said, we're not a banana republic. Of course, when they issued their report, they affirmed that they were indeed a banana republic, and they became a kangaroo court.
Oh, wow.
And it really was a devastating blow.
Sure.
To the leadership and the law, who we are. And like I say, a solid majority, a super majority of America knows better.
Mm-hmm.
And the question we have to ask is, why haven't we done something about it?
Right.
I think we're on the edge of having that come home. The people have accepted it. It's just a matter of, I don't know, the leadership that we've been talking about is just needed there to take us out of being a banana republic. Because in the book, I was there when Clark, this powerful, powerful super attorney,
mm-hmm.
Goes after a bonus, and he gets it.
He gets a
huge oil payment through Exxon, one of the great companies, big companies. Let's be careful on the word great, on one of the big companies.
Right, right.
And it's there in handwriting. You can see it. It's a oil well sitting on the ground there.
I'll be doggone. Well, you know, on page 186 in your book, you wrote that Clark wanted $8 million to kill JFK. Is that the figure that he got, or?
That was part of the bonus, but you know that these things are not written down.
Oh, of course.
These things are understood with a shake of a hand or a short discussion.
Right.
But he was going on the same thing that Robert Anderson was paid to become Secretary of the Treasury. It was that important.
I see.
And he figured, well, I'm worth at least that.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
he went for more. He went for more, and he got it.
I see. Interesting. Well, I have to read this quote. It's a very important quote you've got on page 7 of your book, Chapter 2, and this goes from Lord Acton in 1887. Quote, power tends to corrupt, and absolute power tends to corrupt absolutely. And I think that's an example of what happened during the with Mr. Clark and the Johnson administration and how your book goes into that.
Well, it did, and where it really can be laid out is with Johnson and his psychiatric and psychological conditions. I could barely touch on it in the book,
right?
Because our law firm had hired a psychologist for him.
Mm.
He was in bad shape when he came back to Austin,
mm-hmm.
and he needed help. And I don't know who the guy was, who the psychologist was. The records mm-hmm. are as sealed as deeply as you can seal something deeply.
Right.
But I know who the guy was or what the practice was.
Right.
And what they were trying to do was bring Johnson out of this awful depression because he was very much suicidal. And that, of course, would not have looked good. But the more important thing was mm-hmm. how would he have committed suicide? And this is where it really gets touchy, because he insisted on having the power to wage nuclear war when they passed the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution.
Really?
You don't need a man who's suicidal to do that.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Something else they've covered up is, and he was a religious, yes, he went to church, but he wasn't very religious, and he was, in fact, committed to Christadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
The Christadelphian is one who believes the world will end, the Jewish people will take over again, and all will be well, and it will be a catastrophe.
Mm.
Well, what does he have in his hands when he has a nuclear weapon?
Oh, the end of the world.
The description at Alamogordo when the first one went off, I am the destroyer of worlds.
Oh, right.
And it's just chills you. When
sure.
you think about
sure.
a man in his condition,
sure, right,
ready to do that.
Well
again, you don't want to. You don't. I don't want to get over that statement that he's ready to do it. I spoke a little too quickly.
Right,
he was
right.
capable of doing it.
Well, a lot.
And,
go ahead.
Excuse me.
I wanted to ask you about. You had a fascinating section in your book about how President Johnson apparently delighted in killing and mutilating animals, including a mule. You mentioned that in your book when he was a small boy?
Yeah, and that's one of the big markers for a, I'm not sure a serial killer, but at least a a psychotic, maybe a psychotic killer. Yes, he did that. It was a dog, and then later a mule when he was, when he was growing up.
Wow.
I couldn't tell you exact year, but it would have been his early teens.
Uh-huh. Wow. Wow.
It played its way out.
Wow. And then he became president, and I think there was, I think, if I'm not mistaken, it was either 53 or 58,000 Americans died in that Vietnam, useless Vietnam conflict, and over a million Vietnamese. For what? I still don't understand why we went there, frankly. I don't.
That's a really tough question to get a good, you don't get a good answer to it. The biggest one, I think, is that John Kennedy was trying to keep us out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And there were people who wanted to sell oil and wanted to sell munitions.
Sure.
Airplanes, whatever.
Sure.
A great many of Johnson's friends were in Dallas, where LTV is located.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that's where Big Oil was located.
Sure.
There was more oil in Houston, but it was better organized in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to take it lightly. I mean, I can kind of laugh about it because it's a local situation here between Houston and Dallas, you know, bigger and better and all this.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
that was what was so critical about Dallas being in this position of huge power and wanting more.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1960, oil was hurting.
Mm-hmm.
And so what do? You don't go sign a peace treaty and turn your weapons into plowshares.
Mm-hmm.
Or a phrase I love about John Kennedy is he could turn a machine gun into a pen.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But the point is, and you're right about it, that a huge loss was suffered. I mean, it was 500,000 people.
Yeah, right.
Really, that were directly involved and killed, wounded, maimed. It was awful, and it was so unnecessary. And yet, you look back on it, and we did it. Apparently, on the surface, anyway, through our constitutional processes, but behind the scenes, it was anything but that.
Well, when I drive home tonight, often I will see a Vietnam vet. There are several that hang out around where I live, and they stand out supermarkets, and I feel so sorry for them. I usually give them a couple of bucks every time I see them. I asked them about their situation. They say, yeah, they can't get any help from the government, and they're a Vietnam vet, and they're still traumatized by that experience, and that war ended, 40 years ago?
Yeah.
And you still see the effects in American society today. Many of the homeless are vets from that period here in America. They just live on the streets.
Well, my hope is that you get the truth about what happened with the assassination. It carries over to the war,
right.
And we get some kind of closure. We get what John Jr. asked for, which is penitence,
sure.
Which includes the process of going through recovery.
Right.
And we can't seem to get there because there are some people. Well, that's another story, but it is coming out in the sequel that I'm about to finish up here of how the CIA really took over control of thought in America during the 50s and 60s. It's just fantastic how they had in their pay or on their conference schedule the editor and publisher of the New York Times.
Oh,
the same over at Time Magazine.
Interesting.
The same down at the Washington Post.
Hmm.
The same at CBS. I mean, and these are all, you know, proven. They've been admitted. They're
right,
there.
Right.
And you end up with, you end up with some very specific examples, and I would point right to that, to those veterans you mentioned.
And the situation today in the mass media is that it's owned by what? 5 or 6 different corporations, and they don't cover a lot of things that are going on in the world. How was the press on your book, by the way? How was the reaction in the mainstream press after you released your book, Barr?
You've led yourself into a really good question. I got a great response. I mean, a lot of people and a lot of coverage.
Uh-huh.
But the big boys, when I was to be on Good Morning America and was heading down there, and I got a call to say turn the limo around you know, the studio send out a limo to get you.
Oh, really?
Anyway, they turned it around, and I said, what's going on? And they said, well, it was canceled, and all he would say was, from above.
Oh, boy.
So
oh, boy.
The people you mentioned, and it came out very specifically because after the book was out, a documentary came out and was published on the History Channel.
Oh, okay.
Best seller they ever had.
Wow.
But Jack Valenti, president of the Motion Picture Association back in those days, and a dear friend of Johnson's in more ways than one, decided it had to be canned. Hmm. So he took a protest to the History Channel. He went and pounded on his group. They were pounding on the table at the History Channel to cancel that awful documentary.
Really?
Management said, no, we like it. It's making good money. People like it.
Mm-hmm.
So they went to the publishing group you mentioned a minute ago,
mm-hmm.
that run the show, mm-hmm. specifically to the Disney Channel,
mm-hmm.
and people there said, oh, go ahead, let's just put it out for now. And so they quit selling the documentary. And the broadcasting.
Wow.
You talk about the power of the press. There you have another really good example.
Wow.
And it came up three or four other ways. Some are incredible still when I look back on them.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, the power of the press is powerful.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that figures the power of the press is powerful.
Yeah.
And they're not going to change their mind, I'm afraid. I asked one of them, well, you know, what is this? Or no, one of them asked me, what are you trying to do, scoop us? Well, you've been scooped.
Wow.
I mean, they got so many statements they've made, but the historian's line has been, Johnson was really a very compassionate man, except when his ambition was threatened. That's what we've been telling you all along. What else do you think happened?
Right. Well, if you to name one example, for example, Fukushima happened in March of 2011 in Japan, and believe me, the Japanese people haven't forgotten about it. But if you look at the New York Times now, I don't see any stories about Fukushima. Nothing. All right, you look at listen to CNN. Not on. It's like it doesn't exist anymore. So if they don't choose to report it, they don't choose to report on your book or your documentary. It's kind of out of sight, out of mind.
It really is, and it is. It's just such an injustice. And I mean, the better thing is a disservice to America.
Yeah.
But they can't bring out, I mean, 70% of America, how can you ignore them? And they do.
Uh-huh. They do. That's true. Well, one thing I have to ask you, Barr, and this is, I just thought of this question. Many of the documents have been sealed under some sort of strange executive order to keep them secret from the public and the world. Is it until 2017? Or I'm trying to remember the date now.
Yes, they put a limit on some of them, claiming they involve national security and all that. We don't know, of course, for sure what they are, but it looks like the CIA's behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And what hasn't really been reported is how deep the CIA has been in this whole process. They've been in it deep.
Mm-hmm.
And they have tried to keep it out. And the thinking is that it involves a couple of men that have been, shall we say, primary suspects.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still trying to get information on them. The House Special Committee on the Assassination issued a report, and they said there was a conspiracy. But they said we couldn't find out because we couldn't get some information.
Interesting.
And the chief counsel for that committee said later, you can't believe anything the CIA tells you.
Right.
I figured out the way the CIA does it. They admit it, deny it, and then go on down the road. Now you figure out which way the truth lies. They've covered it in an incredibly effective way.
Fascinating. What role do you think George Bush Sr., the former president of the U.S., had in that, if you were able to find any information on any possible...
Well, that's been really interesting. As you may know, my son was press secretary.
Right.
Furthermore, back in the days when Johnson was running Texas, and I can say that easily, he was running it, back in those days, we we didn't have anything to do with Jeb, with the Bush family.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there may have been, you know, some back door or some other way to do it, but I don't know anything about the Bush family
mm-hmm.
and their role in any of this.
Mm-hmm.
But they're coming out with a movie soon called Mina, starring Tom Cruise, and it's going to track down a guy named Barry Seal, who supposedly flew the airplane that carried some of the assassins out of Dallas.
Interesting.
He flew an airplane that worked closely with the drug lords
mm-hmm.
and kept arms going to carry against Castro.
Wow.
And, of course, the vice president at the time, who I think he was director of the CIA at the time, was involved. It's going to be real interesting to see how that movie comes out.
Well.
But everything points to CIA involvement, and mm-hmm. the director of the CIA at the time was Bush.
Oh.
So, but I don't know, and I'm really just pointing out these people that are in these key positions that have been pointed out by others, and I guess we'll know in a year. It's due out, the movie's due out in January of next year. If they do it right, it's another JFK.
Wow. Wow. Well, I think my own feeling on this, Barr, is that they're waiting for people to die, retire, become so old. Statute of limitations runs out on various crimes. Of course, murder, there's no statute of limitations, but other things like conspiracy, they're probably waiting for the statute of limitations to run out. Maybe that they've got plans to live in South America, somewhere else in the world, I don't know, or Europe. Who knows? But that's a common theme, so that they wait. But ultimately, they'll have to face God and the other side for their crime, and there's no escape.
There really isn't. I don't see it. I mean, so much has come out, and there are a lot of people, really good people. You had one on your program the other day. Chris Milligan.
Oh, yes. He was on a week ago. That's right.
And he and I were in a conference in Dallas, when was it, 2 weeks ago now?
Uh-huh, yeah.
And all of this is going on.
Right.
Chris is another person who believes we're turning a corner here.
Oh, yeah.
And I know we are, because I know what happened. It's just a matter of... You don't have to put it to a vote or anything, like you say. There's no limitations. It'll play itself out either soon or over time, and it's happening.
One of the things that I've read, and perhaps you could shed some light on this, Barr, is that 10 days before he was assassinated in 1963, on or about November 12th, 1963, that President Kennedy ordered or asked the CIA to disclose all UFO files to him. He asked for that because he wanted to approach Khrushchev at the time, who was premier of the Soviet Union, and to let him know that a lot of things flying over the Soviet Union weren't American craft, you know, spying on them, and he didn't want to get into a shooting war with them. And Bush refused. Do you know much about that in your research?
No, I don't. Okay. And it's a very interesting point you're making, because there are some other things that were going on at the same time that would mm-hmm. certainly corroborate
mm-hmm.
that. The initiative was there,
mm-hmm.
you know, behind the doors. Not good things can happen behind closed doors, just as bad things happen behind closed doors.
Right.
Kennedy knew how dangerous it was.
Sure.
I can tell you myself how dangerous it was. Mm-hmm. Is Jackie knew how dangerous it was, because she took her kids to Greece under the protection of the Greek ship owner out there, Anastas.
Oh, yeah.
To protect her family.
Oh, okay.
I mean, to know that the former first lady had to do that.
Right.
It just, you know, it staggers you.
Right, right.
But the effort was there, yes. And I don't know that he would ever have gotten any CIA records. The CIA... I mean, everything shows it was its own being. It had its own existence.
Right. Right.
But so I don't know, but I thank you for that, because I need to check with a couple of people.
Yeah, I can. I can send you what information I've got. My next hour is a gentleman named Dr. Michael Sala. He's a researcher
of an institute called Exopolitics. He's a wonderful man, and I think he's one of the best UFO researchers in the world. And he's the one that told me about it. And if you like, I can put you in touch with him. He'll be on for the next hour. We'll be talking about UFOs.
Very good, because there are some people that have done some deep politics work in Washington that have really been productive. So, yes.
Okay, wonderful, wonderful. I'll put you in touch with him then. One thing, Barr, I was going to say is that it's amazing how Johnson probably thought that once President Kennedy was assassinated, he'd become president. And you mentioned in your book that Johnson himself, do you think he was schizophrenic or bipolar? You mentioned that he had delusions of grandeur afterwards, and then he went into depression. He had a real tough time afterwards.
Yeah, that's all coming out in this psychologist information that I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. And I think he had visions of grandeur from the time he was born. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know how to explain it, because you can see it in his childhood, in his stealing elections when he's in college. I mean, the guy was. He would not hesitate to stop at anything, and that has to be some kind of psychologically motivated paranoia.
Sure.
He was described as being able to compartmentalize, so he could take a lot of different subjects and compartmentalize them and survive. But part of the psychology that's come out now is it overwhelming. That you can put things in different compartments only so far,
right?
And then the conflict between them either bursts out or overwhelms you. And that would, I think, be how I could respond to what you asked about what we just mentioned.
Sure. One of the things that I learned, I lived in India for about two and a half years ago. And when I was living there, I was studying law in India, of all things, on a couple of Fulbright grants. And when I was there, one of the things I learned about was that the law of karma, what goes around comes around, basically. And before I read your book, I had no idea what had happened to President Johnson after he left office, went into this depression, had problems, and finally died in 1972. And I said to myself, well, there's the wheel of karma. It came back at him because... I don't think he was content to wait for the presidency. He wanted to become president in 1963 and carry on for several terms, but it didn't work out that way.
Right. That was a real disappointment to him that he had to give up the second term. But no, he wanted it so badly.
Sure.
And I can trace back to when the plot really started.
Sure.
To kill John Kennedy. And it was right after John Kennedy was elected.
Wow.
Johnson had insisted that the new president-elect come to his ranch in Texas. And there you can see the elements are starting to brew and will develop and fall together over the next 2.5-3 years. He had to be president.
Huh. Interesting.
And the way I put it, because there was also, and this is in the book and in the sequel, Johnson was involved in some pretty not shady, they were playing illegal adventures, and they were catching up with him too. I guess as a measure of grandeur, you want to be president because you can't be sued or anything until you're impeached.
Interesting.
You have this immunity for a while anyway.
Interesting. Do you think President Kennedy would have got rid of him on his second run for re-election?
Yes. Don't let me interrupt. I'm sorry to interrupt you there, but yes.
Okay.
He was on the way out, and he knew it. It was brewing all over Washington, and the newspapers were coming out with articles they were developing. The Senate was investigating.
Wow.
Johnson knew about it, and he knew it was going to happen.
The handwriting was on the wall. So he decided to murder Kennedy so he could become president, so he couldn't be prosecuted.
Yeah, it had to
happen. Interesting. One of the things, too, you wrote about in your book, Barr, and this is really interesting, is that during the fall of 1961, Ed Clark, who was one of Johnson's attorneys, had sent in a guy named Wallace into the funeral of, was it Sam Rayburn or somebody had died in Washington, D.C., and he sent, Mr. Clark sent this Wallace guy in to observe the funeral because he wanted to see what the security detail was like in order to plan for the assassination of President Kennedy.
That happened, and Wallace was a tried and convicted murderer for Johnson in a 1950 killing in Austin involving Johnson's sister.
Oh.
There was a sex scandal brewing.
Uh-huh.
And if it had broken Johnson, who had just stolen the 1948 Senate election, well, everybody in the state was ready to run against him because he was very vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
He could not have a scandal break loose then.
I see.
He had sent Wallace in to kill the key ring leader in the sex scandal.
Mm-hmm.
And let his sister know she better shut up and behave herself. I mean, and you may think these things are small, but back in those days,
sure,
sex and behavior of public officials was very important.
Sure.
A lot more than it was in the Clinton matter.
Wow.
The beauty of all of this is a Texas Ranger who later became Chief of U.S. Marshals in Dallas,
mm-hmm,
was assigned the case, the first
mm-hmm
case,
mm-hmm,
the Kinzer murder, the one
mm-hmm
in Dallas, in Austin in 1950.
Mm-hmm.
And he came up with the fact that it was over the president's, Johnson as president, his sister.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
He also, this Clint Peoples was his name,
mm-hmm,
investigated a murder committed by Wallace for Johnson
mm-hmm
on June 3 in 1961,
mm-hmm,
when a federal auditor was closing in on Johnson and his theft of money, shall we say, through a guy named Billy Saul Estes.
Okay.
Huge amounts of money.
Interesting.
They sent in Texas Commissioner
mm-hmm
of Public Safety sent in
mm-hmm
Peoples, and he tracked the whole thing and convinced the jury in 1984 that Johnson should be indicted for murder.
Oh, fascinating. Fascinating. Barr, we've got a couple minutes left, and I just want to make a quick announcement. In a few minutes, friends, after the top of the hour, we'll be going to Dr. Michael Sala in Hawaii, who I consider one of the world's foremost UFO researchers. He has a lot of fascinating things to say, so please stay tuned for that. And Barr, with your, what I'd like to do is just play this a short 30-second clip from President Kennedy's "Ask Not What You Can Do for This Country" clip, and then I want to come back in 30 seconds and give you the rest of the time to wrap up your wonderful interview.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Hold on, please.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. My fellow citizens of the world, ask not what America will do for you, but what together we can do for the freedom of man.
Anyway, I still get choked up when I listen to that and think about what the future holds for humanity. But those forces are coming back now, and I know that we've got a bright future. Barr, we've got about a minute left, and I want to give you the rest of the time to say some final comments.
To pick up at that point, I have the same feeling.
Yeah.
You know, there's some things that John Kennedy could say more beautifully than you could imagine, and they are still as strong as they are now.
Right.
So keep up what you're doing. If I may help in some way, let me know. The big thing, I think, is really to try and get closure on this assassination and get to where we should be, where we were headed with John Kennedy, where he wanted us going, that vision he could see of a future,
right,
that we don't seem to be able to realize.
Right.
We need to get the right people, and that's
beep on the line. That's President Kennedy beeping in. Spirits often communicate through beeps. But anyway, Barr, thank you so much for coming on today. I will put you in touch with Dr. Salo about UFOs. And thank you again so much for coming on. Please stay tuned,
thank
friends.
You.
All right. Bye-bye and Merry Christmas.